This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. You probably know Michael Shannon as that great actor with the unmistakable face who is really good at playing sinister.
You think I'm crazy? Hey, I'm talking to you, Russell! Hey! Millish, you think I'm a thief?
You're wrong, Deacon! It is a battle against the devil himself! I have seen him abroad in the daylight and the night, and by God, I will force him out!
I'm sorry!
What? Is Mr. Lin in charge?
Is Mr. Lin president of the United States?
Let me tell you something, boys. I am a cop!
And his General Zod in the new Superman reboot Man of Steel probably isn't going to change that impression much.
My name is General Zod. For some time, your world has sheltered one of my citizens. I request that you return this individual to my custody. To Kal-El, I say this. Surrender within 24 hours, or watch this world suffer the consequences.
But in fact, Michael Shannon is a lot more than just a really good angry guy. He can play sympathetic, he can play funny, and he is now, in fact, an internet comedy sensation, which we'll talk more about later. Michael Shannon, welcome to Studio 360.
Thanks for having me.
What?
Just kidding.
Actually, your voice is a lot more Chicago than I anticipated. You worked in Chicago, obviously, in the theater, but you sound like a Chicago guy.
Yeah, my father moved to Chicago when I was 5 years old, and I started going up for summer break, Christmas, all that kind of stuff. And then when I was in high school, I spent a couple of years going to school up there, and then I started doing plays up there when I was 16. So I spent most of my 20s in Chicago and a good deal of my 30s there.
So as we heard in that clip from this huge new Superman movie, Man of Steel, your character, General Zod, informs Earthlings at a certain point that they are not alone in the universe, and not in a nice way. And he does so in a whole bunch of languages, so everybody can understand that he's threatening to destroy them. Do you remember all those?
The languages?
Yeah.
There was Nepalese, Portuguese, and Chinese?
I think.
Wow, I feel like I'm on Jeopardy or something. What is Portuguese, exactly. Nepalese, and Chinese? Nah, wrong. I don't remember how to speak any of them. It was
really?
Kind of a rushed process. It was a last minute thing. When we shot that segment, I just did it in English, and about 20 years later, when they were about to release the film, they called up and said, "Actually, it'd be good to get you doing this in a couple other languages." So they interneted this stuff to me in the different languages, and I learned it in about an hour, and a half hour after I did it, I forgot all of it.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
Speaking of languages, why on Krypton do they only speak English? And why, by the way, are they all white Europeans?
Hey, look, I totally understand. I understand these questions. I had them myself. Sometimes I would think, well, Russell has like a British accent, I don't have an accent, then Superman's mom's Israeli, she's not European, she's Israeli. See, stump the host.
That could be a whole other conversation, whether Israel counts as European or not. But
That's true. I guess Israel is, I don't know. Israel's its own continent.
Exactly.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. I wasn't in at the startup meetings. I wasn't at Warner Brothers didn't invite me at the concept meetings.
I'm surprised.
Yeah.
So you started in the theater in America's new great theatrical city of Chicago, and then did a bunch of small roles in big movies, and then these big roles in small movies, and now General Zod in Man of Steel. Is arriving in the big summer blockbuster feel good, and this is the right time to do that?
Well, June is usually a fun month. You know, it's the first month of summer. Get to go swimming. It's when my daughter's birthday is. So yeah,
I'm talking about your life more more than June.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you mean in the context of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of a hard thing to say whether I'm ready for it or not. I mean, the whole thing is so gigantic and overwhelming. I mean, just the like when I went to see the movie for the first time, it kind of paralyzed me. It was just so overwhelming. And you know, I don't take a huge amount of credit for it. I think Zach is the mastermind behind it, and DJ, the visual effects. I mean, the amount of work they did after we were all done shooting is really what makes the movie so incredible, I think. But
is it like you were doing a different thing since you're in front of green screens and blue screens and all that stuff?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of times when, like, our spaceship was a set of green stairs. And I would walk down the green stairs, and then I'd go look at the monitor and look at the shot and think, man, that looks really weird and kind of silly. And Zach's like, yeah, but, you know, 2 years from now, it's going to look incredible. And, you know, he's right. You know, they did the work. But, yeah, I don't know. What's it going to do to my life? I've had little inklings of it along the way. You know, when I was in 8 Mile, a lot of people saw 8 Mile.
Yeah.
Eight Mile.
The Chris Hansen movie with Eminem.
Yeah, and Bad Boys 2 was quite a popular film.
Boardwalk Empire.
You know, so it's kind of like I've had a little, I've been easing into it, I guess.
Right.
Wading into the superstardom.
Has it gotten annoying?
It's only annoying when people, like, yell at you. When people go like, hey! Like, from across the street, they're like, hey, come over here. You're in that. You're in the thing. I've seen you. Get over here. That's annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at least you don't have a catchphrase they can repeat to you 100 times a day.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is like, everybody wants to know, do I say Neil before Zod? Am I going to say Neil before Zod? They want me to say Neil before Zod. You know.
I think you should just start saying.
Don't say Neil before Zod.
Start saying, release the world engine.
Neil before Zod!
Okay. Okay, I'll do it. Neil before Zod.
In the cartoon spinoff of Lil Zod, yeah. I think we can use that.
Neil before Zod.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Was doing that thing in this weird new way, unlike other acting jobs you've done, fun? And would you like to do it again, or is that enough?
Well, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of factors or different components to that. I mean, A, there's the whole experience of working with Zack Snyder.
Who's the director.
Yes, which was an incredible experience. I would work with him anytime, anywhere. I really love his vision, and he's a really fun person to work for.
You compared him to Martin Scorsese, I saw in an interview. What does that mean?
Just in terms of the attention they pay to the visual aspect of what they're doing and the composition, and they create the paintings, you know, as they're working. It's not every molecule of every frame is taken into consideration. I mean, Zach spends months and months before he even starts shooting, painting, rendering, drawing. That's literally how he finds his way into a project is through drawing, doing storyboards. And I felt like, I mean, obviously their styles are incredibly different, but the fastidiousness of how they approach the visuals I found similar. That's why I said that.
You've played eccentrics in the past. Was playing this?
No, I haven't. No, I haven't.
Really, you haven't?
No, I haven't.
Okay, good. I retract that. Right. But Zod is this genocidal alien. I mean, to act that, I mean, we make fun, but you have to take that seriously, right?
Well, he's a general. I took that very seriously. I took the fact that he was a general very seriously. I mean, it's an awesome title, General. And when I say awesome, I don't mean like cool. I mean
right,
like,
awe-inspiring.
Yes.
And yes.
I mean, I've played some sergeants and a lieutenant, but a general is it's another thing altogether. And it, as far as I can tell, he's general of the entire civilization. It's not
right.
like there's General Tonto or General
right.
Richard. You know,
it's like General Francisco Franco.
Yeah,
you know, of Krypton.
Yeah, he runs the whole show, and he's just trying to. He's just trying to do his job, you know. I mean, at the end of the day, he's just trying to do his job. I mean, I don't think he hates the people of Earth. I don't think he looks at Earthlings and where the rage comes from, or at the instinct to want to do away with them, is simply because he cares that much about his own
right.
people.
They're in the way, and
yeah.
which was. A gray element. I mean, he's the villain and he wants to kill Earthlings, but you know, looking at our own planet, there are people. Oh, this is important for my people, and I got to do what I got to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Earth is a crowded place, and so probably perhaps is the you know universe.
Did you read Superman as a kid?
No, I wasn't really into comic books. I had these two cousins that lived out in the boonies, and they had boxes and boxes of comic books, but I didn't have any myself. But when I would go visit them, because my grandma lived out there too, and I would kind of, they'd show me, they're like, look at this one, look at that one. I'd be like, yeah, that's great.
As a kid, was there a thing that made you think, this acting, I can do that, and I want to do that, I want to devote my life to that?
Well, you know, it all started with Garrison Keillor. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yeah. They had this thing called Speech Team, which wasn't really like doing a play, but you could do little scenes, little monologues, speeches, you know, that kind of thing. And they gave me a speech from Lake Wobegon Days.
Huh.
It was called Booger Days. It was about, I don't know, Garrison going to grammar school, I think. And that was my first monologue. And I never actually got to compete with it. I was an alternate. But I practiced it alone in my bedroom for hours. And that's when I caught the bug. In terms of thinking, I'm a dominant force in this industry, that hasn't really happened yet.
Well, you're on the verge, perhaps,
yeah.
of being a dominant force in the industry.
Yeah.
Do you remember any of that monologue?
Jesus. No. You know, let's see. How long ago was that? That was 26 years ago. I don't remember it. I can barely remember what happened last
night. I understand.
Yeah.
As you prove in Man of Steel, you can do, and other things, you can do unhinged antagonism really well. I want to play a clip from your great performance in Take Shelter.
There is a storm coming! Like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
So, as you do a role like that and a scene like that, is that a way you have been, you are ever in real life, or is this simply a thing you can perform well?
Well, gee, I don't know. I mean, I'm a person who plays people, so except in the case of General Zod, I'm playing Kryptonian. But yeah, you know, I mean, it's not like, what would be an analogy? It's not like sports or something where it's like I just happen to be good at throwing the shot put or something like that. I mean, it's... I've noticed a lot of these clips on this program have needed quite a bit of EQ on them. I do also do quieter scenes from time to time. I don't know. I look at my work. I've been doing this for, let's see now, 22 years professionally. I see a lot of different aspects of myself and all the things I do. Is that particular clip that you just played something that comes from inside of me? Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. It's not something that I'm faking.
Right.
It's not something that, like, I'm putting on a show. It's something, you know, because I honestly feel very concerned about the world right now. I think it's very volatile. And honestly, I don't see how much longer it could possibly survive. So it's something that troubles me a great deal, particularly because I have kids, or a kid. So, yeah, so I do have within me the capacity to get upset about the state of the world as it is currently. Yeah.
The director of that movie, Jeff Nichols, you've worked with again and again, most recently on the lovely movie Mud. And when you were doing theater...
I didn't scream in Mud. Well, is that why you're not playing any clips from it?
It's the producer's choice. I have nothing to do with this.
All right.
When you...
Mud, come here! Mud! Where are you, Mud?
There you go.
Pearl Harbor! No!
There's a different take on the whole idea you could have done.
Yeah. Groundhog Day!
But back to my point. You work with Jeff Nichols a lot. You work with Tracy Letts on stage a lot, the great playwright and actor. What do you find with people like that that you want to keep collaborating with? Or with those two guys in particular?
Well, Tracy and I's relationship goes back to when I was 16. I met him. Because he's an actor as well. He played my father in a play called Fun and Nobody by Howard Quarter, who's now one of the writers on Boardwalk Empire, oddly enough. And I really looked up to Tracy. I was 16 at the time, and he was 25, which means he would have had me when he was 9, which really didn't make any sense. But he's always looked like he could be a dad.
Yeah.
So anyway, when I was doing that play with him, he was kind of a legend to me. He was a real role model. And, you know, a few years later, he invited me to do a reading of Killer Joe. And
his play?
It was kind of his first play. And, I was incredibly flattered, and I went and read it. And it was kind of the most exciting play I had ever read. I mean, it's, I don't know if you've seen it or anybody out there seen it, but it's a very powerful story with very well-defined, interesting characters, and very dark, but very funny. Like, Tracy is very good at the super dark comedy. We also did improv together, so...
Really? The two of you did improv together?
Yeah, in Chicago. We were in a group called Bang Bang for a number of years. But we also, I don't know if you heard of TJ and Dave. They come to New York every now and then. But we go in with them sometimes, too. But I don't know. And we also just became really close friends. And we kept acting together. And then I would do plays that he wrote, like Bug or Man from Nebraska. And it was just one of those relationships that is kind of central to my life, you know. And I feel like, I think the play Bug that he wrote is probably one of my favorite plays ever. And that the character Peter Evans, and the story between Peter Evans and Agnes, the female character in that, is one of my all-time kind of favorite love stories. Because I really think it's a beautiful exploration of human intimacy and how it can make you stronger, but how it also has the capacity to make you weaker, and how close is too close. And I don't know, I think it's fascinating. But anyway, and then Jeff Nichols, we're both from the South, and I just really admire Jeff. You know, the whole way that we got to know each other in the first place was so audacious on his part. He was a film student at North Carolina School for the Arts, And I knew one of his teachers, and he just walked up to one of his teachers and said, give me Shannon's number. I wrote him a script. And his teacher was like, well, you sure? I mean, and Jeff's like, yeah, trust me, I won't waste his time. And he sent me the script, and that was one of the best screenplays I'd ever read for Shotgun Stories. I literally thought it was, up until that point in time, it was one of the best screenplays I'd ever read. And then, you know, obviously from the way I was talking about Take Shelter earlier, that was a tremendously personal project for me. Probably the movie that I hold closest to me in a personal regard. And I think it meant a lot to Jeff, too. I think on that project, we were both having a similar life experience, and we were both expressing something creatively that was reflecting that life experience, and that they happened to be very similar. So,
and it's rare that a political movie, which that in essentially is, works and
right.
and doesn't seem to have some obvious agenda it's selling in a boring way.
Right. Well, and the thing about Jeff is, the thing that excites me about Jeff is because I look at, like, if you look at Scorsese, right? Like, I got to work with Scorsese on Boardwalk Empire, and that was really, really exciting. But the reason that that was exciting for me to work with him is because I saw Mean Street, and Taxi Drivers, and Raging Bull. I saw all those things, and so that makes it special for me to work with Martin Scorsese. But it's like, what if I got to be the Nero in that situation and be actually in all those films that
gotcha.
Created that legacy? And I feel like that's what I have the opportunity to do with Jeff. It's like I'm forging a legacy with a young filmmaker that I think someday is going to be
right.
considered one of the greats of his era. So.
Yeah. That's an interesting comparison. Is De Niro somebody whom you see as a career model?
I look at the work that he did during that period, all the way up through like King of Comedy and even into Goodfellas and that. But particularly the work he did in the '70s, as some of the most committed work I've ever seen on screen, and the amount of work he put into doing something like Taxi Driver. Something like Raging Bull, it's a level that I don't think can be exceeded. I think other people have been inspired by it and gone after it in a similar regard. But you know, when you see like Christian Bale doing The Machinist or Michael Fassbender in Hunger, things like that, to see that extent of devotion in a performance. But I think he really set a bar that can't be topped in that regard.
You have worked a few times also with James Franco, most recently in The Iceman, which came out earlier this year. Let's listen to a clip, a scene from that.
Guess everyone has a soft spot, right?
Guess so.
What the fuck's going on?
He changed his mind.
No. Look, Rosenthal's my best friend. I would never say anything.
Not my problem.
No. God, please don't. God, please.
What, are you praying?
God, please.
You really believe that? You think God will come down and save you? All right. I'll give you some time. Pray to God. Tell him to come down and stop me.
That's Michael Shannon and James Franco in The Iceman. And there's a scene in which you weren't.
I didn't
you
yell.
You weren't during the yelling.
I should have been, though. That's my one problem with that scene is that I wasn't yelling.
No. What? He has an entirely different, it seems, acting style than you. What do you make of his work?
Well, I love James. I mean, I've never seen a human being take on more different projects in my life.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy, I think while he sleeps at night, he's doing a project. I mean, he's reading a book or taking a class. I mean, even when we were working on that scene together, he brought a book with him to set of like, you know, the history of theater or something. And, you know, he just can't stop. He's like a sponge, you know. He just wants to learn, have as much knowledge as possible. So I think that's very admirable. Although I guess you hear about that a lot. Particularly, there are a lot of of the actresses that went to Ivy League schools, aren't there? Like Natalie Portman.
Claire Danes.
Claire Danes. So
Jodie Foster.
Maybe I'm the outsider, actually, the undereducated one.
You have had this big year with Mud and The Iceman and Man of Steel. And then there was this thing that I referred to earlier, which got you tremendous amounts of attention, which is your reading of this insanely vulgar and hilarious letter that this University of Maryland sorority girl sent out to her sorority sisters. I'm going to play a clip of you doing that.
Cool. If you're reading this right now and saying to yourself, OMG, Becca, I've been having so much fun with my sisters this week. Then punch yourself in the face right now so that I don't have to fucking find you on campus and do it myself.
Now, again, that was a real email sent by a real sorority girl, and that what a brilliant conception to have you do that.
Yeah, I really have to give Funny or Die a lot of credit for that, and Brenna Rifkin at IDPR. She handles publicity for me. Basically, I was out in L.A. for the Iceman premiere, and she came and picked me up at the hotel and said, "You're going to go read this letter." And I didn't know anything about it. I'm not a real social media kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of try and stay away from that. So I got there, and then the letter was all written out on cue cards. And I just gave it how many times? We did it 7 times. And, I had no idea what the hell she was talking about.
You were
about,
just trusting your people that this would be funny and wonderful?
I had fun doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, obviously, if you look at my resume, I'm kind of game for anything, you know. I mean, I'll go out on a limb and do something that I'm not entirely familiar with. But it was fun. I mean, it was a lot of fun. But I didn't really understand what she was upset about.
What she was upset about? Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I couldn't figure out if she was like people weren't drinking enough or they weren't slutty enough or something. I couldn't figure it out.
All those things.
Yeah.
She's 20. Who knows what she was upset about?
Yeah.
The thing is, people who have seen you now are in Boardwalk Empire, Zod, whatever. You've been funny before. You were.
There's a precedent.
You were sort of. I mean, you were troubled in, for instance, Revolutionary Road, which is where I first noticed you. But you were kind of the comic relief in that movie.
Well, when I read that book, those scenes made me laugh out loud, which is a rare occurrence when you're reading a book. To laugh out loud,
right?
And I thought the guy was hysterical.
Yeah,
I mean, in a very kind of, I don't know, Lenny Bruce kind of way.
Exactly. And Premium Rush, you were funny.
Bobby Monday. Yeah, you were laughing when they played the
exactly.
The clip.
Exactly.
I saw you.
So, do you think in a career management way? Oh, I've got to do this now to show people I can do this other thing. I can do this other thing.
I didn't think that for a long time, but I'm starting to get to the point where I might give in. I might start making decisions based on trying to change the way that I'm perceived. Does that make me a weak person?
No. No. It makes
because
you
at a certain point
trying
it's
to
like,
create a sustainable career.
Well, I mean the thing is like it'd probably be actually easier for me to just keep playing the same part over and over again. But I like variety.
Yeah.
So I'm trying. I'm gonna do some. I'm gonna do some things that really surprise people. I signed on for the new Smurfs movie. I wasn't supposed to say anything, but I'm gonna be Papa Smurf in the next Smurfs movie.
I'm not sure I believe you.
You don't get to question me on air.
No,
I'm a bunch of total strangers. Who are you to question me?
I read that you were once up, seriously up for the lead role in a romantic comedy by a.
I was, yeah.
Famous director.
No, that's a totally true, serious story. But I lost out to somebody who does nothing but romantic comedies.
What was the movie?
J. Jesus, I can't say that.
No?
I can't say that. I would I'd get in so much trouble if I said that. I'm already in trouble about the Smurfs thing. I don't need more heat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to see you with Papa Smurf.
Or maybe like a Smurf version of Zod.
Smurf's gone wrong.
Yeah,
where Smurfs
yeah.
have taken over the planet. They're no longer the cute little mischievous.
I wouldn't mind seeing a Smurf version of Feyora. You know what I mean?
There you go. Yeah.
I've totally thrown this off.
No, it's all
off
good.
The tracks. We're going through the pasture.
Thank God we're not live.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
This Garrison Keillor monologue makes you think, wow, I can do this. This is fun. At what point did you decide and why that, like, this is really what I can do for a living rather than just in school?
I don't know. I was kind of freakily unconcerned with that. Like, I, for years, just did plays in Chicago. And most of the time didn't really get paid hardly anything to do them. And took, you know, a variety of odd jobs. And I would see other people around me, you know, fellow peers of mine, you know, saying, man, this is getting old. I want to make some money doing this. I got to move to New York or L.A. And I always thought that was, like, a bad idea. I didn't really want to do that because I was having fun. I was having a good time. And honestly, doing Killer Joe, the play that Tracy wrote, it was kind of like that was what brought me out of Chicago and brought me to, you know, we took the play to the Edinburgh Festival in Scotland, and then it moved to London to the Bush Theater, and then went to the Vaudeville on the West End. The next thing I knew, I was off Broadway doing it with Scott Glenn and Amanda Plummer. And one night I met a fella named Lee Daniels who came to the play and said he wanted to be my manager, and that was that. It was like, it really boiled down to that play.
Which is excellent because you got to have a breakout without seeking it.
Yeah, I was just doing this play. You know, when we did Killer Joe the first time in Chicago, we were doing it in an old classroom that had about 40 seats in it. And we did it for 8 months. We did it 4 nights a week. We didn't get paid anything. And we just had a blast doing it. And then finally, you know, we had a friend who was from Scotland, and she said, you guys should really sign up, try and get into the Edinburgh Festival. They would love this over there. And that was that. But we didn't see it coming. I mean, honestly, the guy who originated the role of Killer Joe, right before we went to Edinburgh, like the last few weeks of the run, he dropped out of the play because he got a part in this movie, Blink. Michael Apted film called Blink. He got the part of the killer in that or something. He's like, I got to go do this movie, guys. It's a big opportunity. We're like, okay, bye. And then, you know, we went off and kept doing the play. And then eventually when we were doing it off-Broadway, after Scott Glenn left the show, he came back and did it again. But by that time it had passed.
You said what I found to be a very funny thing, but I guess it turns out to be a true thing, in an interview in the New York Times a few months ago, saying that your great dream since you were 15 was to be on the David Letterman show.
Yes.
Now, Man of Steel, you get to be on the David Letterman show.
Yes, right before the premiere. I'm going to go be on the Letterman show, and then I'll go to the Lincoln Center premiere. So it's kind of like it's going to be a very kind of Cinderella evening for me.
And also, now that I am sitting here 2 feet from you, you could play David Letterman's son.
Yeah, I've heard that over the years. I've heard that we look, you know, maybe I'll find out on Letterman that I am, in fact, his son.
Same part of the world, Indiana, Kentucky, yeah. Chicago.
That would be a very moving episode.
Yes, a very special.
A very special, yeah.
David Letterman. So to the degree that that wasn't a joke and that was kind of an adolescent brass ring, I want to be on the Letterman show, will you have a new one? Will you have to invent a new one?
Well, I'm sure the first time that I'm on the Letterman show, it'll go by so fast that, and I'll be so nervous that I won't really be able to appreciate it. So I'll probably want to go. I want to keep going on to the point that I get real comfortable. You know, like when Steve Martin goes on a talk show. It's kind of like he's just sitting
The Tom Hanks version?
Yeah. Where he's just sitting in his living room. Like where they don't like write out his lines for him ahead of time. He can kind of say whatever he wants.
Yeah.
Or like Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Like to get to that. That's the I think the upper echelon. Not only going on a talk show, but literally like being able to do whatever you want.
I see the whole phase three of the Michael Shannon career dawning.
Yeah.
You know?
And then inevitably
surprising comedies, Smurfs, yeah. A talk show, and regular.
My own talk show eventually.
Yeah?
Yeah. The End of the World with Michael Shannon every night. We'll talk about
it. And that would be the subject with every guest.
Catastrophic issues facing Earth with celebrities.
Well, there are enough channels where you could do that now.
Yeah. Yeah. Somewhere in the 600s.
Exactly. Yeah. I just discovered last night that the 300s are where all the porno channels are. I didn't realize that.
Wow. Gosh, I wish I had a satellite. I don't get reception. I mean, we
You don't have cable television?
No.
Really?
I don't watch TV.
At all? You don't have a TV?
I mean, there's a TV in our house, but my girlfriend uses it to watch Arrested Development.
And so this is like a decision. No social media, no internet obsession.
Well, as you can see on my 3 for 360, it's like I was explaining to you earlier. I'm so devoted to my work that I don't really have much time for extra.
Yeah, a script,
curricular.
Some music from 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And
LP. I'm telling you, this is really worth getting, LP.
Okay.
He's from Deer Hunter. I put it there in, what are those, parentheses? Yeah.
Yes. So you don't have television, cable television at home, so you don't watch yourself in Boardwalk Empire?
I used to. They would send me the DVDs,
uh-huh.
You know. But it takes a long time to watch a whole season of television. Yeah, I don't. I my girlfriend watches them. She lets me know whether I'm meeting my standards or not.
So you have an earthling living with you who can tell you what's going on in the popular culture.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Michael Shannon, it has been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Kern.